Investment advisory services offered through Independent Solutions Wealth Management and Blackridge Asset Management LLC. Peak Broker Services LLC is not an affiliate of Independent Solutions or Financial Guys LLC.
You're listening to The Financial Guys.
We're $23 trillion in debt, honey. We don't have an extra surplus of money. Newsflash, guys. Stop attacking businesses, because when all the businesses are gone, nobody's going to pay your salary anymore. You get that?
If the goal is to create a loser mentality, you're winning.
I'm going to build a big, beautiful wall with a big, beautiful door. Well, guess what? We have a big, beautiful door, all right? It's the wide
it's
open
about 90%.
Southern border, right?
Yeah.
Here's Glenn Wiggle and Mike Lomas.
All righty, welcome back. Mike Lomas, Glenn Wiggle, Financial Guys, the place where money meets politics. And today, just a really, really an honor to be with the Sandy Beach, the great Sandy Beach.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Good to be here.
I am, you know, you're a three-time nominee for Billboard Magazine. Was inducted into the Buffalo Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And you're inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's right.
How cool is that?
That is cool. I didn't even know I was up for that until I was in it.
Seriously?
They don't tell you ahead of time. And it was the same thing with the state, New York State Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You don't know. And maybe it's just as well. Because if you're up for it and you don't get it, you'd be depressed. But luckily, I didn't know.
Knowing that now, I didn't know you were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I have to go to Cleveland now.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is my sister was here from Florida earlier in the year, and she was getting married up here. And she and her husband had one request. They wanted to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to see my exhibit.
Yeah.
Okay. So we get up early, boom, boom, boom. We go to Cleveland. We find a parking space, and my mobility is kind of limited, as you can tell. And we finally get to where the exhibit would be, and it was closed for redo. It had been that way since they opened the Hall of Fame, and they changed it for the radio personalities. So it was closed, and I still haven't seen it.
Is it open yet?
Disappointing.
Yeah, it's open now, but I want to wait till my sister comes back and give it another shot.
Yeah, absolutely. What a cool thing. So Mike Lomas, Glenn Wiggle, the place where money meets politics. We're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to interview Mr. Beach here, and we're going to be all over the place, I bet. You've probably listened to a few of our radio shows. You know that
sure.
There's usually no theme to that. We just, and when Glenn and I, when we do prep, we don't use the prep. So
yep.
So we're all over the place.
Mike, your mic is low. Can you turn up a little bit? Yeah. Sounds like you're.
I turned it down because I figured he's not going to say anything worth listening to.
Let's start out. Can we talk about the early years of Sandy Beach? I mean, so I've studied you a little bit and understand that you were not such a good kid. A lot of detention.
I used to get into trouble in school. But the point is, the trouble I used to get into in school has made a good living for me.
Yeah.
In other words, I always like to make people laugh. So I'd make my classmates laugh, and then I would get in trouble. Or I'd set it up so they would get in trouble with a laugh that I got. You know what's funny is I'm reading the new Seinfeld book, and he was talking about his early days, and that's one of the things he used to do. He would get a classmate in trouble and then not take credit for it, and the classmate would get tossed out. I was in detention 3 out of 5 days in any given week.
That's funny. Because over 60 years of radio, one of the things you're known for is your jokes, but one of the things is your actual laugh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My laugh is actually recorded in many radio stations where people who have worked with me before, or they like the laugh, so they just bring it with them.
That's really?
Yeah, it's a real laugh. I can tell you what it was about. Abner Nelms. We were giving away a prize in Hartford at WDRC, and the winner's name was Abner Nelms. And I'm thinking, nobody is named Abner Nelms. This guy deserves a prize. He deserves all the prizes we have for being named Abner Nelms. And so I just went off on that. The other time that the laugh was there was here in Buffalo when I think it was Jubilee Market. I had a sale on pork butts. And I just thought pork butts sounds like something I don't want to eat. But they had it on sale.
Yeah. I'll tell you, though, after you've retired from radio, there's been people. So this is so funny. So Glenn and I, when we meet people, Glenn and I will say, And I would say probably one third of the time, I'll say, oh, I love your guys' show. I love your guys' show. Do you know Sandy Beach?
Yep.
Oh,
that's nice. Well, that's nice. Very nice.
But one of the things they'll say is, we miss his laugh. We miss his laugh.
Yeah, I think when you have
not any of the content of your show, just
no,
relax.
Just no, I'm just kidding. Not what I'm talking about. You know, political stuff.
Just kidding. No, but that's funny. Is how like you're known for your laugh. I thought that was great. Right.
Well, it's good to have be known for something.
Yeah.
In 60 years, it took me 60 years to get to this point.
Yeah. So tell me about the early start of radio. Like when did radio find you, or did you find radio?
No, I think it was a combination. I was undecided when I was a senior in high school, and I'm not making this up. I swear it's true. Of whether I wanted to be a disc jockey, because I loved radio, and this was the days of rock and roll, of course, and we all loved listening to WKBW in Massachusetts, and we knew all the disc jockeys, we knew all of the artists and whatever, either that or a CPA.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Now you're going to get my laugh.
I was accepted by the Bentley School of Accounting in Boston, and the Leland Powers School of Radio, TV, and Theater, also in Boston. And I had to make up my mind that summer which one I was going to go to.
Wow.
And this is the truth. I'm not making this up. The only reason I chose being a disc jockey over a CPA, I figured I'd have to wear a coat and tie and look presentable. And I didn't want to do that, even though I'd like the job and I was fabulous with numbers. I could do numbers backwards, forwards, and sideways in my head. But I didn't want to wear a coat and tie. So disc jockeys, nobody dresses up in radio. Mm-hmm. And so that's the reason I chose radio.
Wow. And so you went to radio school?
Yeah, radio school in Boston, 2 years. It was for radio, television, and theater. But you had to take courses in all three. Though there's some people naturally who gravitated toward theater. They were easy to pick out. And television were all the good-looking people. and us, the rest of us, if we could, everybody looked like Don Postles there.
Your better half Bernadette is still laughing.
But
he's yours, by the way.
but with radio, it was fun, and it was immediate. You didn't have to, in television, you got layers of people you have to go through before your contribution is there, mm-hmm. Okay? But in radio, it's there, and it's there immediately. And that's why, that's the reason I chose radio.
Glenn, I'll let you break in here. I'm hugging the interview.
No, I'm just enjoying listening along, and I've missed listening on the radio. So I used to always, love listening in the afternoon, and then when you switch to the morning, I thought, I'm always busy in the morning. But what I found is your laugh is just such a positive influence. I would turn on when I was having a rough morning and maybe the coffee didn't go right or something, and I would turn on the radio, and there was your laugh, and it always just made me smile, which was just so special.
Good to have it work out. When I graduated, I had sent out 100 tapes, 100, and got 2 replies out of 100. And out of the 2, I got a job. Wow. So as long as one of them showed up, and that was in Virginia, Radford, Virginia, and that's how I started.
Almost, I would think back then, when you think about the radio back then, the radio was everything, right?
Radio
families
was everything.
Gathered around the radio. It was really the form of information politically, culturally. Mm-hmm. You think about all that, what the radio did.
Yeah, and you'd if you were a kid like I was, you'd get off that school bus and run into the house and start listening.
Yeah.
And when the stations would do their countdown shows, you actually had a pad and paper and you'd write them down. It was very exciting. And you'd hope that somebody was breaking a new song then. And the days when radio was an entertainment medium for somebody like myself, unfortunately, they've kind of changed that.
What was your big break? The thing is, nobody just all of a sudden gets a show, right? You don't just knock off Snortin' Norton or...
Yeah, my big break is I was working in Hartford, and Hartford had personality disc jockeys, just as KB did. KB was, of course, miles above Hartford, but I got a chance to move up the ladder from there, and I got that call from Jeff Kay, who is the program director of KB. And WKBW in Buffalo, I'm sure it's appreciated by the people who lived here. But if you didn't live here, if anything up and down the East Coast of America, you heard WKBW.
Yeah.
It was a dominant radio station. And to join that group of people, the Joey Reynolds and Danny Nevereth, and people who were legendary on a national basis, to join them was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's the Michael Jordans of radio.
Yeah, it really was. And it changes everything.
Was it similar back then to not like, so I'll use Joe Beamer as an example, right? Yeah. Joe is now, he went from behind the scenes to running our show on the weekends to now, you know, filling in. And then, you know, the natural progression is Joe eventually gets his own show. Was it similar back then?
Well, let me tell you about Beamer, okay? and I'm not making this up either. I want to be known for the guy who discovered Joe Beamer. Joe Beamer was working the phones and had left to work in retail and came back. And I always thought off the air when I just see him work and talk to people and whatever, this kid has a really good personality. Look at that. And he works hard. He does work beyond what you even ask him to do. And I said, he's got it. He really does. I went to Tim Wenger. And I said, let's keep our eye on this guy because he is just super good. He's got he's a home run. Well. And now he's on BEN more than the test pattern.
Yeah.
And I feel very good about that because I think he is. I think he's a star.
Was it similar back then? I mean, the same type of path. You were working behind the scenes. Yeah. You get a little action on the mic.
It was. As a matter of fact, you'd have. It's like in the movies. You ever see a movie about a radio station? The guy, the host, gets sick, and somebody fills in for him. And wow, we didn't know he was that good. and they went on, and he was, you know, turned out to be very good. Beamer is going to be a star. Yeah. He's a star in the making now.
Yeah. Tell me about your path to Buffalo. I mean, so you, it was in 1968?
68.
But you left and came back, right?
Yeah, I left three times.
Okay.
I left to go to San Francisco and I left to go to Dallas. But KB was always was and always will be the love of my life. That's the reason I left was the fact that I was offered really nice jobs.
Yeah.
For really nice money. And basically, you got to give it a try.
Yeah.
You got to give it a shot. But even then, I missed it. I missed it while I was gone. It was always in the back of my head okay, this station, we're a huge station, like the NBC station in San Francisco. I was programming that. Or WBAP in Dallas, where I was programming that, and that's a huge station. I got a good story about BAP. It was probably in the top three country stations, WBAP in Dallas, and it covered, just about all but seven states. Huge, monstrous. So we had a helicopter, we had all kinds of things. It was just a monstrous station. And all of the big country artists used to come to visit.
Wow.
Because of how big we are. And they'd play acoustic guitar and on. And one time we were expecting Charlie Pride to come by. Charlie Pride was going to come by, and our afternoon guy was going to interview Charlie Pride. Okay, so everybody's excited about it. And then I'm back in my office, and I get a call from the front desk, and they say, Charlie Pride's here. Okay, this is it, man. This guy's really good, okay? I go down to the front lobby, and I look, and there's, 9 white guys, 1 black guy. And I walked into the lobby and said, which one of you guys is Charlie Pride? Got a huge laugh. But the thing is, at that stage of my career, we were doing personality. We were entertaining. Now it's very hard to do that because management decided at some time that entertainers cost money. We can put somebody in there to play 12 in a row who doesn't cost money, and that's what we'll do. So a lot of that is missing now, but it was there in abundance at the time because of competition.
Yeah.
When I came to Buffalo in 1968 in radio, there were 11 different owners, 11 for radio.
Wow.
Wow. Now there's three.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and with no competition, they're running not to entertain, just to survive and to generate as much revenue as they can.
Yeah, you know what we've realized, not nearly having the experience on radio that you have, but we're on in Buffalo, we're on in Rochester, and we're on in South Florida, and a big chunk of South Florida. But it's radio is very different down there. It's not, you know, it's almost like playing, I feel like it's playing hockey in the NHL, Buffalo versus being on the Panthers.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone to see the Sabres down there, and nobody cares about the Panthers.
Right.
But, and we get that feel down in Florida where, yeah, we do well, the office does well. It does well because of so many people, unfortunately, leaving New York and relocating down to Florida. But there's not that sense of like here, and then not to the level you're at, but we get that like, oh my God, so Financial Guys, you know, and you get that sense of pride, like, holy cow. And down in Florida, like, yeah, it's Financial Guys. Are you guys on the radio?
Right, yeah. Like,
I remember when I started, I would leave after my shift and I'd be walking down the street thinking, I wonder if that person that I just passed, I wonder if they listen to me today.
Yeah.
That was that kind of excitement. Yeah. Worked real hard to get to that point. Did more things than you were expected to do. Now it's not the same thing. It just simply isn't.
Yeah, it's tough. Although Buffalo still, I would always, Glenn and I always talk about that. It's like the last, you know, one of the last hubs where, you know, I mean, people still, they must recognize you and say, oh my God, Sandy Beach. Oh my God, it's Sandy Beach. And it's just that it's almost like the last town where NHL stars are really, really hot and radio broadcast still hot. Danny Neverth, the same thing.
I mean, yeah, Neverth is the same. As a matter of fact, he's appearing live in his basement.
Along with Joe Biden?
He sends Bernie and I videos. See, he's still got the competitive urge to entertain.
Yeah.
And nobody's told him that he's not on the air anymore.
Just plug it up. So you tell Danny to come in here. This is open most of the time.
He sends stuff, and it's good stuff. I mean, there was a time there when I was his boss. Nobody's ever really been his boss.
You were his boss?
I was program director when he was on the air. Sure.
You're kidding me.
No.
So one of the things, looking backwards, you and him were like the Buffalo Letterman Leno.
Yeah.
And now you guys were always good friends? Or because it seemed like looking back on radio, and again, I'm looking back, I wasn't there, but it seemed like he would shift stations, you would shift stations, a lot like Letterman Leno on a Buffalo level.
Well, here's how I met him. You want to know how I met him?
Yeah.
Okay. I came up, I'm so excited about being on KB, but I had been warned that be careful because anything you think is fake or not real is fake and not real. They'll put you on endlessly. They'll never end. Just don't believe anything anybody says. And the day before I was going to start, I was in with Al Lafler producing some promos. And I see a face in the window of the door, okay? And it's, can I come in? I was in the middle of my recording, but sure, I don't know who this guy is. And it turns out it's Neverth. I find out later. It's Neverth. So he comes in, and he puts his hand out. And then he grabs me by the shoulders and says, I'm Dan Neverth, and I'm gay, and he kisses me. On the lips. On the lips. It was a pretty good kiss, actually, as I think about it now.
He's all yours, Bernadette. He is all yours. Till death do you part.
That's only, of course, compared to my ex-wife. But even normally, it's to be unexpected.
Yeah.
So he says, I'm Dan Neverth, I'm gay, he kisses me on the lips. But I had been warned so stuff like that might happen.
Yeah.
So I grabbed him by the ears, and I said, I'm Sandy Beach, and I am too. And I kissed him back. So that's how we started.
Oh, man.
Of course, we were both on the he was at KB before I was, and then when I left, I came back as the program director. Suddenly, he was my boss. He's still my friend, but he's my boss. He's my daughter's godfather.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, and we're still friends, and we do the trips all over the world together and stuff like that.
Now, were you guys competitive back then? I mean, it did seem like, just looking back at history, that he would leave a station, get a better deal. You'd get a station. Yeah. A lot like Leno and Letterman, right? They're I don't know if they're, I don't think they like each other, those two, but they were very competitive, right? He got this, he got that. Was it the same?
Well, you were always competitive because of the people we had. I mean, we had Jack Armstrong and really good top flight personalities, and you always want Joey Reynolds.
Yeah.
You always wanted to do better than the other guy, and the first thing you find out is, you may have been the best guy at the last station, but you're not necessarily the best guy at this station. Mm-hmm. So it always kept you on your toes, ready to go.
Wow.
Yeah, competition's good.
Yeah. Want to hop in, Glenn? Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say competition's great. You know, I think you miss that now, and you see that not only in Buffalo, but you see it all over the country, sadly. And what I've noticed with radio, and I wanted to ask you about talk radio and your transition, but what I'm noticing with talk radio now across the country is they've really gone to just national. There's not a lot of local talk anymore. I mean, Buffalo, again, is that unique market that's got, you know, and same with Rochester and Bob Lonsbury out there and some great jocks out there. But you just don't have that anymore. You have these national, behemoths. I think Rush Limbaugh, obviously is the biggest known, but now you've got these others that, started off as podcasts, made it to radio. And these stations seem, as if they're driving bottom line versus, looking at the quality, unfortunately. But
There's one reason for that, money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason. Keep in mind, Rush Limbaugh was a disc jockey before he was a talk show host, and the money is the big difference.
So
Rush went from being a personality jock to doing what he's doing now, and other people try and copy him, but he is so good at what he does, and he's put his brand on that. That you always got to do what you do best. If it's good enough to compete, it is, and if it isn't, it isn't. But don't try and copy anybody.
Yeah. So what made you transition to talk radio? Talk to me about going from the disc jockey world and the music world to the talk radio world.
Well, I can thank my former boss, I guess, Larry Levitt. Larry Levitt owned WBEN and 102.5. At that time, I was doing mornings on 102.5. And competing with BEN. And one day he came up to me and said, how would you like to do some talk radio on BEN, do an hour after you get off the air? Come Kevin Keenan and you and come in and do an hour. I said, sure, I'd like to try it.
Now, was talk radio big back then? Because it seemed like you were talk DJs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it transitioned into talk radio. When did that happen?
That's the transition time. And what I found out was that's no different than what I'm doing now. I was never a disc jockey that played 20 in a row. Never, ever. And talking between records and talking as a talk show host about the same thing. Keep in mind, I always remind people of this with Joey Reynolds. When Joey Reynolds was on KB at night, he played two-minute songs, and at the end of 2 minutes, he had to do shtick. He had to do some stuff at every record after 2 minutes. Think about this. All made up in his head. Mm-hmm. All made up in his head. Most of the disc jockeys, you put them on a stage and they couldn't ad-lib their way out of a paper bag. Joey Reynolds did 5 hours a night with shtick between every 2 to 2.5 minute song.
Yeah.
Now, if you can do that, you can certainly do talk. And so that's what I liked. I liked the fact that people asked me, what did you think of that song or whatever? They were almost oblivious to me because I was doing what other personality jocks were doing, thinking of something coming up. Okay, can I go here? What about this? And so that's what I was working on.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. That was how talk radio became what it is after being a music DJ.
Yeah, we had somebody, we were doing a TV show for Channel 2 for a while, and somebody there said, what you guys do, Beach, Bowerly, and even you just on the weekends, and we only have to fill 2 hours, but it's unbelievable. And this was an anchor. And I said, what do you mean? Like, you're in front of all these people on the TV? He said, yeah, but we read.
Yeah.
We're reading off a teleprompter for the most part.
That's the difference. If you watch television and you see who's on there, the ones with radio backgrounds always much more natural in front of the camera. The ones without it usually have not had the time to to try it, so they're not as comfortable with it as somebody who's used to it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's
I love
how,
the format.
You know, when I was programming, I always hired people that you could put on a stage and say, okay, here, talk to me for 3 or 4 minutes about lamps.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'd see how they do.
Yeah.
And the ones that could talk for 3 or 4 minutes about lamps without having to look it up were the ones that went further in radio.
With all your energy and your wit and all that, did being a program director drive you nuts? Did you want to get back on the air?
I was dealing with lawyers.
Oh.
Keep in mind, my first real gig was for NBC in San Francisco. So I would be working with the NBC lawyers in the morning, okay, of my work day, because they're 3 hours difference in the time zone. So that's how I started my day, talking. And here's how lawyers are. Jeff Kay, the program director of BEN, had done a thing that I thought would be fun to try in San Francisco, and that is the talking cat contest. in Buffalo, it was the cat said, I love to listen to WKBW. Okay. In San Francisco, it was KYUU. Okay. So I put the proposal, everything was in writing for San Francisco and the lawyers. So I put it in there. I wanted to give away $1 million. Okay. And I said, let's get an actual $1 million and get all kinds of security guards. Let's go to the nearest mall. You bring your cat there. And if your cat can say, I love a KYUU, we'll give you $1 million. So the lawyers in New York said, no, you can't do it. I said, why? They said, you have to legally be able to win the prize. I said, why can't we do the contest anyway? They said, because a cat can't talk. And I said, So far. And I said, and let me tell you something. If we happen to get a cat that does say, I love KYUU, if you'll notice
$20 million day.
The rules, yeah. It says that if you did, we own the cat. I said, do you think it'd be worth $1 million to NBC to have a cat that talks?
Yeah.
But they still wouldn't let me do it.
Unreal.
That was just the way it is.
Uncreative
fun
thinking.
Killers. Yeah, that's the fun killers.
Lawyers. Yeah.
You have had the opportunity to interview some amazing people. I mean, yeah. The Beatles, right?
Yeah,
just
the Beatles.
Amazing people.
Everybody.
Tell us about some of those. There's got to be some that stick in your mind. That
well, yeah, John Lennon. I interviewed the only Beatle I haven't interviewed is Paul. But Jeff Kay said, the Beatles are in Toronto. They're here for the bed-in for peace. And he and Yoko are available for an interview. I said, great. So they set up the time and whatever. And so Jimmy Adler and myself are waiting for the time to come. And because KB was always sold out, you had to run the commercials. You had no choice, okay? So it's coming up to time for the interview, and I look up, and he's not here, and Adler's going, no, what are we going to do? I said, okay, well, I'll do the live commercial first, and hopefully he'll come in during the spot, and then we'll do it, okay? So we're looking, and he's not there. Okay, I'll do the spot. I start the spot, and in 10 seconds, he goes, yes, he's here. John Lennon, the biggest star in the world, is there on the phone waiting to talk to me. But if I dump this spot, there'll be hell to pay because we're going to lose revenue.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So I do the whole spot and keep him waiting. Well, while I was keeping him waiting, I was doing a commercial for Malecki Wieners. The wiener, the world awaited. So,
that's the intro.
So I said to Lennon, I said, pardon me, I really had to do that. I hope you understand that. He was laughing his tuchus off. He thought it was very, very funny. But he'd never been on hold while was selling hot dogs. I can tell you that.
The world awaits the wiener. Any of these? Tell me about some of the other interviews. I mean, you've interviewed some amazing people.
Well,
probably,
there's some really good. There are people that are good interviews and people that aren't.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, sometimes the interviews go awry. This was before before he got into trouble, okay, Bill Cosby. I was going to be interviewing Bill Cosby. Now, at the time, I was very excited about that because nobody knew what was going to happen
in the future.
So
no, he was the father of TV,
I'm going to have Bill Cosby on. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
I can hardly wait. And so I start the interview, and I'm no more than a minute into the interview, and I hear him talking to somebody else. He's going, what? Really? I couldn't understand what was happening because there was nobody in my studio or whatever. But he says, to me, can you hold on just a second? I said, sure. He says, can we put the interview on hold? I said, I've never had an interview on hold. It's a live interview.
Yeah.
What was happening was just before the interview that I was going to do with Bill Cosby, it was on the internet that Bill Cosby had died. Okay?
Oh, my.
And everybody was contacting him. He said his daughter was on the phone wanting to make sure he was all right because it just spread like wildfire all over the place. And it happened just moments before I was supposed to interview him.
Unreal.
Yeah. And then there's Jake LaMotta, the great fighter, one of the best fighters ever. I was going to do an interview with him. And Raging Bull, of course, was about Jake LaMotta. He was just a tough guy.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the interview, and I don't know what kind of an interview it's going to be. I have no idea. And he starts, and he says, Sandy. He said, thanks for having me on. He says, you know, when I was fighting, I fought Sugar Ray. That would be Sugar Ray Robinson, another great fighter.
Sure.
I fought him so many times I got diabetes. And I thought, that's pretty funny. That's really good, okay? I laughed. And then another line, and then he comes back and says, you know, I fought Sugar Ray so many times I almost got diabetes. He repeated what he had just said.
Oh, wow.
And now I know we're in trouble.
Because
he said it a third time.
Oh, boy.
And now I'm looking at Tony Caligiuri, and I've got the palms up going, what do we do now? We have to get him off the air.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to embarrass him, but we gently got him off the air without him knowing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the interviews were really, really fun as long as you do preparation for them and you know what about the person, and you listen. That's the key to interviewing, is to listen. Because if you don't, maybe something that happened to Joey Reynolds might happen to you. This is when Joey and I were both at WDRC in Hartford, okay? Joey always was thinking about the next funny thing to say. But sometimes he wouldn't listen to the person he's talking to before he's going to say what he wants to say, all right? So he had a prize to give away to this woman, and this was in the 70s, and she didn't win. She didn't win. So she was saying, oh, I was hoping to win, and I didn't win. And he goes, well, Mrs. Gagutz, don't worry about it. Maybe you'll win next time. Oh, but I needed the prize and whatever. And he says, you'll get it next Tuesday or whatever. He couldn't get rid of her, okay? So finally, he says to she says to him, I wanted to win because I just lost my son in Vietnam.
Oh.
But he doesn't hear her say that.
Oh.
He's not listening. He doesn't hear her say it. So what does he say to her? He said, look, lady, this isn't Queen for a Day. You're not going to get the prize. I heard it because I happened to be driving my car into work when I heard him say it. You got to listen.
Got to listen.
You got to listen.
Ouch. Yeah.
Any of these interviews ever make you uncomfortable? I mean, you know, you've talked about some pretty controversial stuff, right? You're the only one I know that got kicked out of the Erie County Fair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they booted me, and I love the fair. I used to go to the fair every year. I go to the fair, and I got kicked out for quilting. I made fun of quilting.
Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
I thought it was a show on abortion.
No, it was quilting. I had the program in my hands of things going on that day. And they were doing this, and they're doing that, and they're doing the quilting exhibition. And Tony and I started, and I'll tell you a funny thing about Tony. Tony and I were having fun with quilting. We'd never quilted, obviously. Well, the people apparently who do quilt don't have a keen sense of humor.
Surprising. Yeah, I would think quilters would be funny.
Outgoing.
We were asked to leave and not come back.
See, I think you find them at the beer tent at the fair. That's surprising.
Oh, my.
And this is BN. I mean, this is a major league radio station,
right.
And they kicked us out, and we were asked not to come back.
Any interviews that have ever made you, like, security issues? Like, you know, it's funny because Glenn and I are on 2 hours a week, and we've had people here, the threats here, you know?
Technically, there have been threats, not necessarily to me directly. I know a KGO in San Francisco, some guy came in years ago, and there was no security at all. Just came in, walked through the front desk, walked into the studio, and shot somebody.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so they had to put, because of where the station was on foot Delaware, just at Delaware and North, they had to put new glass in there, and the glass was so heavy they had to put it in with like a big piece of machinery. Because you're just too vulnerable.
Yeah.
I was doing a remote once for Northtown. By the way, I kind of miss being with Northtown. I was with Northtown for 40 years doing their commercials for 40 years.
Wow.
But with Northtown, I'm doing a live spot at the Toyota dealer, and I got it in my hand, and my left eye says there's some movement going on. There's something going on that I'm not sure, but I'm in the middle of the commercial. So you're totally at the mercy of whoever wants to do whatever they want to do.
Sure.
And it's suddenly I see it's a face, and I'm turning around to show you what it's like, a face. And it's a woman, and she's looking at me, and she's now maybe 6 inches away from my face.
Oh, my.
Now, I don't know who this woman is, and I also don't know what else she has. Does she have something in her hand?
Right.
I really don't know. And it turned out she got right up next to me and started screaming at me. I had done some shtick about the teachers' union, and she was a teacher.
Oh,
and there again, if you think the quilting people, I was going to say, have a keen sense of
humor. I thought it was a quilter from the fair.
Yeah, the wild and crazy quilter
tracking you down.
But you got to be careful because everybody knows where you are at every time, and you just have to. Yeah, you just have to hope for the best.
Yeah.
You know, usually I think if there's trouble, I just point out where Bowerly works. It takes the heat off of me right away.
Oh, Sandy Beach, he's in that studio over there.
Yeah, he's the good-looking one down the hall. Yeah.
That's funny. Oh, you have seen everything throughout your time. I mean, you know, going from record players to popping in this to where we are today. Where do you see the future of radio? I mean, we're doing a podcast right now, which is, you know, to me, it's crazy to think that maybe 5 years from now, people might get in their car and there's no more AM/FM dial. There's radio.com and iHeartRadio and all this stuff. And I'm always a late developer, you know, like I get the, you know, I'm just getting a microwave now, you know, like that's how, so to me, like to think that, you know, where the future's going and how hard it's going to be to break into stuff, or is it going to be easier to break into stuff? I mean, you know, the to get the equipment to do a podcast now is relatively cheap in comparison to you breaking into the radio industry and having to earn your way up. However, if you want to do a podcast, now you're up against thousands of people as opposed to you, Danny Nevrith, you know, and just a few of you competing for that position.
Here's the problem, and it's a major problem. I'm a huge cheerleader for radio. I always have been.
Yeah.
From the time I'd get home and get off the school bus and until this very moment. But I don't have that kind of feeling for radio anymore because of what's happened to it. What has happened to it is they've abandoned the primary use of radio. Mm. Radio is good for two things, and that's to inform and to entertain, okay? if there's a huge hurricane happening, you need radio. You need that information. Mm-hmm. What's happening? Where can I go to be safe? And whatever. The entertainment factor of you've got somebody on the radio that's making you laugh, making you cry. Those are the kinds of things they're used for. And when they were doing it for those kinds of purposes, there was always a use for it. And there always will be a use for the information aspect of it. But the entertainment value is once they found out that, yeah, I can get really good numbers and I can translate those really good numbers into really good revenue, okay? Mm-hmm. I can do it with the guy who is sweeping out the studio at the end of a shift. I don't need the guy who just did the show.
Yeah.
And they decided, first of all, the first thing they did is cut down the number of day parts that mm-hmm. actually had entertainers.
Yeah.
It used to be they were all entertainers. When mm-hmm. I came to KB, every shift had an entertainer. Then they decided, well, we'll just keep it to morning drive and we'll cut down the rest of it, or we'll just go plug in with national stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheaper, whatever. And they decided to run the radio station not as an entertainment information venue, mm-hmm. but just as something that you could run commercials on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm seeing now.
Yeah.
I have been extremely fortunate that my career kind of ran hand in hand with radio and how they use radio. Now, if I were just starting now, I don't think I would do it.
Hmm.
I really don't. As much as I love radio, they have now that they allow you to buy as many stations as you want,
yeah.
And suddenly they
it's too commercial.
It's too commercial.
Yeah.
And that's the I know it makes money because mm-hmm. whenever I would speak to a college class or anything like that, I would just put a dollar sign up on the board, say this is what it's about, and if you understand this, mm-hmm. you're on your way to understanding radio.
Yeah.
Now that's almost all that it is,
mm-hmm.
and they've taken it away. And the sad part is they've taken away the venue for young broadcasters. Guys like Joe Beamer,
yeah.
there's fewer and fewer places to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like TV is going the same direction. There's the entertainment value is just gone. Like there's just the shows that are coming out, the movies coming out of Hollywood. I have no interest anymore. And maybe it's an age thing, but it just seems like the quality has gone so far downhill with the talent.
Like this, when you got out of work or you got out of school or whatever, you could hardly wait to turn something on that radio.
Yep.
Now, there's still some of that,
mm-hmm.
but there's not as much as there should be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a lot more of it right now.
Think about in your core roots, there was no radio.com app that you could say, I'm going to listen to Sandy later on. I don't need to catch him at 9 o'clock. I can catch him at 2 o'clock because mm-hmm. I'm on the treadmill.
I'll tell you a funny story. The owner of a radio station, actually owned more than one, called me in one day. I was his main guy, okay? And he's giving me a conversation that starts off with, we sit down and we have these conversations, and I give you all kinds of ideas for your show, but you don't use any of them. He said, "Why is that?" I said, "Because they're lousy ideas." And that's the truth. That is the truth. I was once offered a job in Miami at WIOD, Isle of Dreams, okay? This clown for a general manager wanted to change my name. And I said, my name is Sandy Beach.
Right.
We're in Florida.
Right.
Right.
How does that not work here?
It's appropriate.
Yeah.
Don't you think we could kind of keep this? And I'm thinking, if you're that low on good creative thinking, I don't want to be there.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Absolutely. Now, we asked you about, folks you've interviewed, but what about moments? I mean, you've seen a lot of stuff over here.
Here's a moment for you.
I mean, there's got to be things that stand out, right? Whether it's 9/11 or, I don't want to put stuff in your mouth, but.
My first job. I think you'll like this. My first remote in Milwaukee was at a fitness center, and it was a beautiful fitness center. just gorgeous, and they were just opening it. And
well,
I was
now,
just,
what is that, a fitness center?
A fitness center. It's
they
like
used to
gym.
Be around?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Before Cuomo, BC. Okay, yeah. So I had a remote there. That's good. So the woman who owns it is obviously pregnant, and everybody's congratulating, hey, the baby, whatever, this and that. Now, okay, it's my turn to interview her.
Yeah.
Okay? And Mrs. Gagoots, here she is, Mrs. Gagoots, the pregnant owner of this thing. So I say, congratulations, Mrs. Gagoots. When is the baby due? She said, I've already had it.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
I'll tell you another good never story. It's one of those shameless stories. You got to be shameless in order to tell a story like this because people will go, I used to like him. This guy is a bad guy. Okay? Well, Neverth and I, we used to get almost all the remotes for KB, and he'd take almost any remote offered to him because he loved money. He still does. Okay? You guys ought to know that. He probably built half the building. But he always loved money. And I really, truthfully, I like to do other things when I'm not on the air. I had horses at the time. Wow. I go home, clean the stalls, ride the horses, do this or that. Yeah. But anything he didn't want to do, he would have them come and talk to me, saying, well, Sandy loves to do these sort of things. Talk to Sandy. Then what I would have to do is I'd have to weasel my way out of doing them, okay? So one time he came to me, he said, did that minister from Eden call you? I said, no, he didn't. He says, well, he's going to. He said they're going to do a broadcast, not a broadcast, but a remote to raise money for their church with Eddie Fainer, the king and his court. Eddie Fainer is a softball player.
Okay.
Okay. And they were very good. They had three guys that played against usually local teachers' squads and stuff like that. Okay. Yeah. And now it's in my head that this guy's going to call me. I'm not going to want to do it. It's I'm going to have to weasel my way out. And 2 days later, he called.
Yeah.
Guy calls, Sandy. So-and-so, this is so-and-so down here in Eden. We're going to play the king in his court, and we'd love you to come down and play on our team. And I'm thinking, I don't want to do this. I said, well, thank you for thinking of me. I really appreciate that, but I've really, really stretched to the limit. I really don't have time to do it, but thank you. Thank you. I'm hoping he just as well, thank you. But he doesn't. He keeps going and keeps going. And finally, I need the final decision. I got to say something that's going to make, he's going to make sure I'm never going to play on that team, okay? So he says, are you sure? He said, I'll tell you what, you don't have to play the whole game. Just play a couple of innings. That's all, just a couple of innings so we can promote it. I said, I can't. He says, here, one inning. Come and play one inning for us and we will be so happy. And I said, Minister, I said, I can't play. I said, have you ever seen me? He says, no, I haven't. I said, well, I can't play because I have no right hand. And there is this absolute death silence. And I said to him, Dan never told you to call, didn't he? He said, yes, he did. I said, he's always doing cruel things like that. And there was another time when we had a basketball team, the KB Yo-Yos, where we used to play. We had some guys on our team that had played at Canisius and whatever, so some ringers, and the disc jockeys, and we would play the teachers' teams.
I remember those games.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're supposed to do is it was going to be set up that I was going to take the last shot. We had always let the teachers win, but I was going to take the last shot, okay? So what would happen is on the left side of the court and the right side of the court, I'd be on one side, and they'd say, okay, he's going to take the last shot. It was like the best player we had. But when the ball came in, the ball came to me, and I took the last shot and missed it, okay? So now teachers, what we called him, was angry that I took the last shot, and he was supposed to. We come face to face at center court, and I put my fist way back of my ear and go and take a swing at him, but I miss him by an inch. I mean, we do this every night.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got it. Okay, this one night, it was just I missed him by less than an inch. And I broke his nose.
Oh, no.
Seriously. And I broke his nose, and there's blood flying all over the thing.
I just can't imagine what the children are doing.
Yeah. One of their teachers, I busted his nose. Nevereth grabs the mic and tells the kid, God. That was a cruel thing to do. It's only a game. You should learn from this. And he's giving him the message that I did it on purpose.
They're escorting him.
Oh, man.
Just about.
That's unreal.
So we had a lot of great stories. I mean, once we were playing a game down in Horseheads, that's quite a ways from here. It was a snowstorm. It was a terrific snowstorm. And we're playing in Horseheads. And we're going down there. We usually went in two or three cars. That was about it. So I was in a car with Nevereth and Stan Roberts and Freddie Klestine. And we come down, and it was Nevereth's car. And we're coming down the hill, and we started sliding sideways. And Danny says, hang on, I'm not kidding. the car starts sliding. It goes up and impales a roadside cement barrier, comes down, bang, just like that.
Oh, my.
And there's dead silence, and Nevereth says, Freddie? Are you, Freddie Klestine, you okay? Yeah, no, I'm fine. How about you? And he named, like, two other guys that were in the car. Then he names me, Sandy. Sandy, you okay? I pretend that I was dead.
You guys are both cruel to each other.
Oh, man.
So you can see from this kind of stuff that we were always trying to...
The question is, did he panic?
Yeah. No, they waited a little while longer.
Oh, that's unreal.
Oh, man.
Unreal. Well, you guys are still close friends, and that's incredible. Huh?
Well, you know, his wife, who passed recently, Marie, who I adored... But part of my on-the-air shtick for maybe 30, 40 years was to do shtick about Marie. And, of course, she knew it. She had no problem with it.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know it, it was I said once that Marie looked like she had a fire in her face and they put it out with a hatchet. another line, like, she snuck on the conjugal visit bus to Attica. And we used to have great fun. This is the kind of stuff we used to do.
Wow. Yeah, which made great radio.
Yeah. I don't do jokes about her, but we still do shtick whenever we can.
Let me maybe we can just wrap up with a little bit about I'd like to ask you about New York State and Buffalo. I mean, you did a lot of talk in the last bunch of years about politics, right? And it just seems like the state itself is on an endless road to nowhere.
It's sad because I love WKBW, and WKBW is in New York, and I didn't realize all of these years that I had this love affair for KB, that in order to love KB, you had to love New York State. New York State is on a death spiral, I think. And you know what's funny is I talked to Bernadette, and Bernadette is born and raised in New York. And I think that her roots are in New York, okay? But if your roots aren't in New York and you're just here, you see what we have to go through. I can see, a moving company just setting up a place to leave. Lots of people leaving, not many people coming in. it's pretty sad because it's all political.
Yeah, and you know, the sad part is, as many of us who love Buffalo as you do, right? Yeah, I mean, there's no secret to that. You left and came back and left and came back, and it just drew you in. The people here are unreal. They really are. We've Glenn and I have had the opportunity to be all over the country in different offices and divisions, and the people are what keep the foundation here. But it in the last few years, really in the last 2 to 3, it's amazing to see the amount of people leaving here.
And Irv Weinstein once told me, we were in California, and he told me that no matter where he goes when he would go on vacation, there'd be people from Buffalo who would recognize him and want to buy him a cup of coffee and sit down. And there's a camaraderie about Western New York that something special. I know that when I was programming KB and hiring disc jockeys, the bar was set high enough to start with, but the fact is that they wanted to be here. They had heard good things about it, especially broadcasters.
Yeah.
Because when I started, the market was like, I think, 12th. And now it's nowhere near 12th.
Yeah.
But broadcasters, a lot of great broadcasters came here. Channel 2 has had a lot of them that that left and went to Chicago and whatever. So it's a great was a great broadcasting market.
Now, WBN was with, there was TV radio at the time, right?
BEN was owned, BEN stands for Buffalo Evening News, and it was a newspaper. And 102 and 930. And so they had it all wrapped up. The worst thing that happened is when they started allowing people to be multiple owners. Suddenly, you used to be able to improve yourself by going across the street. Mm-hmm. Now you had to go across the continent. It's not good anymore.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us. It's
incredible. No, you could.
Yeah.
You can definitely see why you're a 3-time Hall of Famer.
I absolutely
really enjoyed listening.
Bill.
You guys are the financial guys. I expect some kind of remuneration. Bernie, look under those headphones. Is there a 5? Maybe a 10.
See, remember in the beginning he started out with, it's all about money now? It's all about money.
One of these guys.
He figured it out. 60 years he figured it out.
He's in Florida.
60 years.
He's got it right. He's in Florida. I'm here in a snowstorm, and you're in Florida.
I know. Glenn's got it. He's got it right. He's in Florida. I get the chance to fly back and forth, too. So, listen, enjoy your retirement. Are you able to do that? I mean, you literally have run and run and run, and sometimes it's really difficult. We see that in the financial planning business. The hardest thing is people go from it's their identity doing what they're doing to saying, look, I'm going to actually take some time off.
I'm the king of my own domain. Yeah. I can do whatever I want to do now. I can eat when I want, sleep when I want, do all of that. It's no problem at all, and it's there awaiting me every day. I look forward to it.
Yeah, good. Do you look forward to having him home, Bernadette?
No.
Bernadette's like, listen, can't you find him a part-time gig in your podcast here?
First of all, she's going, is he going to tell that I have no hands story again? I'm so embarrassed. He's embarrassed me in front of everybody.
I love that. Well, God bless you, and thank you so much for everything you've done for radio, so much you've done for Buffalo. You know, Buffalo is Sandy Beach, right?
Oh, let me tell you something.
It's amazing. The day you retired, people were calling us crying.
Yeah.
And they never met you.
It was very nice. The reaction was very nice. I was very moved by it. Terrific. Well, it's been good.
And you know, the thing is, I saw people crying when you retired, and I thought, gosh, I wonder if Glenn and I could ever make that type of impression on somebody. If we retire, is anybody going to cry?
I can't tell you how many general managers have cried when I left.
Outside of my wife, I don't think anybody's going to cry when I retire. By the way, how do we get invited to something? We never get invited to any of these broadcast things. We find out other people are getting awards, and we never get even invited.
Really? Well,
never.
You should. Yeah. I'll let you know. Because they're working on getting 3 halls of fame in one in Buffalo. The entertainment, is coming together.
We feel like we're getting snubbed. Like 20 years of doing a weekend show. We're not on a week, but a weekend show. We should at least get the invite to wash the dishes after.
Yeah, you know what's funny is
park the cars.
Park the cars.
People in New York, in Buffalo especially, are very slow to change. If anything, I'm sure you found that out. Mm-hmm. They don't want to change anything.
Yeah.
I brought in good disc jockeys, and they didn't make it because they replaced somebody who had been here 20
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It probably says a lot about the politics of the
But look at it too, like right? this. Not only are you one of the money guys, you're better looking. So that works out good for you.
That's because Glenn's in a different studio, right? If he was here, he'd be saying the same thing.
I've always said I got a face for radio. So. Anyway.
Right. Thanks, guys.
Well, God bless Thanks, you Andy. And your family, and thank you okay. so much. And thank you so much for spending time with us.
Pleasure. That's
really
my pleasure.
Awesome, awesome deal.
By the way, just before we sign off here, you guys really got us through. When you change and leave the job you're in, where you've always had your insurance, you change. You got to change everything. Working through you guys, you did a great job.
Oh, the Medicare.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
What? That's a nightmare.
Yeah, we are so blessed that we have so many great people here.
Very right? nice.
So many great people,
Very
whether
nice.
It's our Medicare department, our auto and home departments.
Very nice, good. Except for that guy over there.
Yeah, Joe.
But everybody else. Yeah. We met everybody else.
Everybody but Joe Telton.
That's really good.
You and Joe, not so much. All right, we're going to sign off here. On behalf of Mike Lomas, like us on Facebook, follow us, subscribe to us on YouTube, hit the bell. Our website, thefinancialguys.com, 833-FIN-GUYS if you need anything. And once again, thank you to Hall of Famer Sandy Beach. I am now going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hopefully they actually open your section so I can be there. That'd be a real son of a pup if I showed up just to see your stuff and it was closed.
That's right.
It was closed.
That's what happened.
Yeah. All right. Well, God bless you and your family. Thank you so much. Mike Lomas, Club Wiggle. We'll see you next week.